Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Sharai Hritasva Kvacha Nirvina Chita. Shochan Vimuyan Upayati Kashmalam. Kvachit Chagandharva Puram Pravishtaha. Pramodate Nirvritam Nirvritavan Mahortam. Shurai Vitasva Kvacha Nirvanachita. Shochan Vimuyan Upayati Kashmalam. Kvachit Chagandharva Puram Pravishtaha. Pramodate Nirvatavan Mahortam. Upayati Kashmalam. Tasva kachat nirvina chita. Suchan vimoyan upayati kashmalam. Kvachit chakandharvam puram pravishtaha. Ramotate nirvatavan mahortam. Surai Hita Svaka Chagnir Vinachita. Sochan Vimuyan Upayati Kashmalam. Kachit Chagandarva Puram Pravishtaha. Pramodate Nirvitavan Mohurtam. So should I by very powerful enemies. Hrita Svaha, all of whose possessions have been stolen. Kvacha, sometimes. Nirvina Chetaha, very morose and aggrieved at heart. Shochan, deeply lamenting. Vimuyan, becoming bewildered. Upayati, achieves. Kashmalam, unconsciousness. Kvachit, sometimes. Cha, also. Gandharvapuram, an imaginary city in the forest. Pravishtaha, having entered. Pramodate, he enjoys. Nivritta vat, exactly like a person who has achieved success. Muhurtam, for a moment only. Translation, sometimes being defeated or plundered by a superior, powerful agent, a living entity loses all his possessions. He then becomes very morose, and lamenting their loss, he sometimes becomes unconscious. Sometimes he imagines a great palatial city in which he desires to live happily with his family members and riches. He thinks himself fully satisfied, if this is possible, but such so-called happiness continues only for a moment. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The word Gandharvapuram is very significant in this verse. Sometimes in the forest, a very big castle appears, and this is called a castle in the air. Actually, this castle does not exist anywhere but in one's imagination. This is called Gandharvapura. In the material forest, the conditioned soul sometimes contemplates great castles and skyscrapers, and he wastes his energy for such things, hoping to live in them very peacefully with his family forever. However, the laws of nature do not allow this. When he enters such castles, he temporarily thinks that he is very happy. Even though his happiness is impermanent, his happiness may last for a few years. But because the owner of the castle has to leave the castle at the time of death, everything is eventually lost. This is the way of worldly transactions. Such happiness is described by Vidyapati as the happiness one derives from seeing a drop of water in the desert. The desert is heated by scorching sunshine, and if we want to reduce the desert temperature, we need huge amounts of water, millions and millions of gallons. What effect will one drop have? Water certainly has value, but one drop of water cannot reduce the heat of the desert. In this material world, everyone is ambitious, but the heat is very scorching. What will an imaginary castle in the air do to help? Srila Vidyapati has therefore sung. Tatala Saikate Vari Bindu Sama Suta Mita Ramani Samaje. The happiness of family life, friends, and society is compared to a drop of water in the scorching desert. The entire material world is busy trying to attain happiness because happiness is the prerogative of the living being. Unfortunately, due to falling in contact with the material world, the living entity simply struggles for existence. Even if one becomes happy for a while, a very powerful enemy may plunder everything. There are many instances in which big businessmen suddenly became paupers in the street. Yet the nature of material existence is such that foolish people are attracted to these transactions, and they forget the real business of self-realization. So for those that are joining us and weren't with us in the previous classes, a little background. This is Judd Bharat speaking to King Lahugana. Preceding this chapter, there's a few other chapters where, practically speaking, for the first time in his life, Judd Bharat is speaking intelligibly, coherently, transcendentally. Because before that, he was playing the role, purposefully, of one who was a dullard, an avaduta, a madman. And people thought of him that way. Now he's revealing to the king just the opposite. And hearing, because he must have seen something within the king that inspired him to speak rather than remain silent and apparently dull. So the king gets it. And the king falls at the feet of Judd Bharat saying, "You're not a dullard. You're a perfectly realized person. And everything that you said, I didn't understand it so well. Could you say it again and bring it down to a level I can understand it?" So he says it again. And then he continues, aside from the nature of transcendence, the contrasting position of material existence. So this is a whole, this chapter is a metaphor of a soul. It starts with the soul in the forest, and then metaphors that are forest-related, where one is seeking happiness and instead one gets pain and misery and displeasure and misfortune. Repeatedly, it's in the Sanskrit, and it's also how Prabhupada has done the translation, this kva chit. And the first line is kva cha. The third line is kva chit. Cha. So sometimes and sometimes. So he's just giving an inventory of sometimes and sometimes, the unwanted part of material existence. The wanted part of material existence is the allure to bringing the senses in contact with the sense object and getting a buzz that says, oh, happiness. Pleasure. And one who does that, from Bhagavad Gita's message, the opposite happens. There may be some buzz. There may be some sensation that's temporary, that's perceived by the receiving person. Over there is the instruments of the senses, over there is the object, and the context says happiness. Or it may be it's distress, because it's a place of duality. But even the happiness we're hearing in this verse, it's muhurtam. Interesting. Muhurta is being translated as a moment, but muhurta literally means an hour and 36 minutes. And in the purport, Prabhupada expands it and says, it may last for several years. And in any case, whether it's small, medium, or large, it's temporary. The happiness of senses in contact with sense objects is temporary, and it's misleading. It's misleading in the sense that it's not real happiness, because it's simply a covering of real happiness. The real happiness is the last line of the purport, self-realization. And self-realization means God-realization. Self-realization without God-realization isn't self-realization, or it's incomplete. Just like the explanation of the Brahma-Bhuta verse. Brahma-Bhuta, Prasanatma. There's this word socha, na sochati, na kangsati. So those that are in the shocha, they become vimuyan, they become bewildered by contemplating this Gandharva Puram, or the wealth that they have, someone comes and plunders it, and then it's misery instead of happiness. Because whether it's someone, an agent of the government, or a criminal, or death, or whatever, it can be slow, it can be quick, whatever it is, gone. And then the hankering turns into lamentation. It's a setup. Guaranteed 100%, just like death. Prabhupada would sometimes say, they say that the life expectancy is increasing. And as far as I can see, the death rate is 100%. They want to live forever, but so... And why does somebody want to live forever? Who's asking that question? Because we're a soul that lives forever. But we're misidentifying with the temporary, so the expectation of living forever is never going to be met. But the expectation of happiness that doesn't end is never going to be met. But it's a hankering, the happiness that doesn't end and is ever increasing. That's a spiritual happiness that we're hankering for. But we're looking in the field of the material energy, and so there's disappointment. It's the nature of forgetfulness of the real purpose of life, self-realization, meaning God-realization or Krishna consciousness. And the absence of the awakened pursuit of Krishna consciousness, these are all default positions. I think everybody knows the term default. If you don't run a program, then there's a default program, and it runs. You have to turn on the other program, and then it can run instead of the default program. But if it stops, then you get the default program. So the default program is in the absence of Krishna consciousness, which was the previous two chapters of Jadbharat, describing transcendence. The default mode is this one. Gandharva Puram is a phrase that Prabhupada would use many times when speaking. Pushpa Akash is another one. Pushpa Akash means flowers in the sky. And Gandharva Puram is a Puram, or a city or a castle in the sky. Gandharva is not Akash, but the Gandharvas are flying around in the sky or in space, some other planet. So happiness that doesn't exist is like flowers in the sky, or Gandharva Puram doesn't really exist. And in the purport, Prabhupada is detailing, supposing somebody has this dream, vision. I noticed that's a language that's being used in politics today. The dreamers. They came to America with the hope of prosperity, and they came illegally, and they didn't get legitimate stay in America. Dreamers. So there's those kinds of dreams, the happiness to come to America and settle in America and become happy. Anyway, aside from modern politics, there's the dream of material happiness. So at different times, in different ways, Prabhupada describes here, it's in the forest, one may go and have a vision. Delusionary vision. Oh, there's a castle in the forest, like a fairy tale or something. But people live that fantasy, a skyscraper building or a castle, and they do whatever they need to do in order to Ugra Karma activity in order to get that castle or get that skyscraper, with the hope, as he's explaining, that I and my family and our riches can all reside there forever. Now, some persons do have the reality check. It's not going to be forever, but I'll pass it on to my children and their and the grandchildren, and that way longevity will exist, although I won't be around. And some people are working very hard towards that, giving the fruits of their hard-earned labor to their children and grandchildren. And nothing wrong in principle with that. It's just in the absence of Krishna consciousness, it's a pipe dream. It's a Pushpa Akash or Gandharva Puram, because it's all gone. Poof. However long it may last, it's temporary. Poof. The dream is poof. It's like you wake up from a dream. Poof. It's over. Because it wasn't real anyways. So there's night dreaming and there's daydreaming, and they're both dreaming. But when the dream breaks, or the Gandharva Puram disappears, it's a setup for lamentation or sorrow, the material kind of sorrow. A fool's paradise. The other example is wealth accumulated. Oh, yeah, I wanted to say this. This phrase, Gandharva Puram, is something that Prabodhananda Saraswati also uses. The material happiness, he uses the phrase in his writings, is like that. Gandharva Puram. And Vidyapati is referred to twice in the purport. Vidyapati is one of the writers, poets, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu particularly appreciated. And so we, followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, take Vidyapati's writings as authoritative, and he's likening material happiness to a drop of water in a desert, gives the phrase from his writings. Water is valuable, no doubt. Other times I've heard Prabhupada make this reference to Vidyapati's writing, saying, having to do with thirst. Here it's reducing the heat of the scorching desert. What's one drop going to do? Or if you're having enormous thirst, desert-like thirst, here's a drop. Gee, thanks, but that's not going to quench my thirst. Doesn't take care of the need. So what's the need of a living entity? It's not material accumulation. Therefore, the prudent advice for devotees, trying to be devotees, is we don't make over-endeavor for worldly things. We accept what comes of its own accord by honest labor. Here comes something of its own accord. And the expectation that happiness will come otherwise is a foolish expectation. Ugra karma, working passion. Work very hard to get something more than what you that comes of its own accord. It brings misery. The solution to the anxiety of wishing to have more is more painful than not having what you think you should have. So therefore, the consistent advice is honest labor according to lawful means and accept what comes. Because each of us are destined to our past activity and modes of nature involvement to a certain amount of happiness, a certain amount of distress, a certain measure of good fortune, ill fortune, that we have been the architect of. And now here it comes from the material energy coming our way. So acknowledging that, then what? And don't become complacent or lazy. Well, it's going to happen, whatever's going to happen, so I don't make any endeavor. That's not the solution, not the recommendation. Recommendation is with great enthusiasm, we pursue bhakti, those that have the good fortune of association of Prabhupada's teachings. We are very enthusiastic, we're never lazy, with regard to activities for pleasing Krishna. We don't make over-endeavor, we make a reasonable endeavor, a strong endeavor to please Krishna. And then whatever comes, it comes. We accept whatever comes, it comes. In terms of personal maintenance or family maintenance or the community and so forth and so on. We have our fundraising department for the temple. But it's not an over-endeavor fundraising department. We make an honest endeavor and Krishna supplies whatever Krishna is going to supply. We make an honest attempt to please Krishna, and Krishna supplies. Sometimes Prabhupada would say in a proactive sense, sometimes he'd say in a reactive sense, people ask, where do you get your money? We'd speak about in the parliament, in the floor of the legislative assembly in India, there was this speculation, ISKCON must be an agent of CIA. Because where do they get their money? So, it must be from the American government, and they're here to do some diabolical, you know, American government work, all these American, European people. It's the agents of the CIA. So, the response that came to that accusation, there's totally a specious and speculative argument that has no factual support at all. And Prabhupada would say, because, you know, where do we get our money? Krishna gives us our money. Where do you get your money? Krishna, you don't understand Krishna gives you whatever you have. We understand Krishna gives us whatever we have. Yeah, but you don't have jobs with income. We have service to Krishna, and Krishna supplies the income for those that have jobs and those that have devotional work. Krishna is the supplier in all circumstances. And therefore, whether one has a job or one is living as a brahmachari or a sannyasi, the one who we're dependent upon is not the employer or, with our begging bowl, you know, some generous person. Ours is a position of acting in service to Krishna. He would say again and again, when we go to the public for making members or selling books or whatever, it's not with a begging bowl. People look upon it in that way. My brother shared that with me once. I have an older brother. He shared confidentially, people look at you like, you know, you're beggars. The book distribution effort. And, you know, I understand you, and I understand that's not your position, but people look upon you that way. And so they you know, in the lunchroom, that's how they talk. So, you need to figure out a better way to go about your business. And so, therefore, there are better ways to go about our business than during my, you know, era of book distribution in airports. We didn't go about it nicely. I mean, some of the persons were not going about it nicely. I just heard something very nice in Detroit. I think Vaisheshika Prabhu was visiting there or something shortly before, or sometime before I was there. Something like that. Maybe it was Malati was sharing something she heard him say somewhere. If I understood correctly, a slogan, a saying that Vaisheshika Prabhu has requested our leaders in North America to consider, this is the year of giving. And by that, it includes the message when people ask, how much? And the answer is, honestly, it's yours. Just give from your heart. With the understanding from his experience as a book distributor, some people say, well, I want to give you nothing. Can you still give me the book? Yes. Will you really mean it? Yeah, we really mean it. Because at the end of the day, that mood of giving brings a stronger return than if you had set a price. And it builds a relationship with the public that we're a group that's giving. And they want to reciprocate with those that give. And I'm sure there's more to it than all of that. But the asking for people to give something from their heart is necessary. This is another very simple rule of fundraising. If you don't ask, people may never offer. Now, some people may offer even if you don't ask, but if you ask, it's one of the rules of fundraising, just ask. Give people the opportunity to participate in the mission. And you can give different options and methods and so forth. And some people are inspired over here and some people are inspired over there. But not fruitive. As soon as it becomes fruitive, the heart becomes contaminated. Purity is lost. Just a little concluding message here. From European history, there was a period of time when the Catholic Church was everything. It was buddying up with the kings. The kings saw this is a really good way to control the public because the religious doctrine that everybody accepts is Catholicism, so they were hand in hand, church and state. And that led to corruption of both. Then another thing happened that led to the Protestant Revolution. There was this phrase, selling indulgences. Some of you may know about that one from public school. Indulgences. So when there's one of the processes of prayaschitta, or atonement for sin, in the Catholic Church is confession on a certain day, in a certain place, in a private space. You can go see the priest or the number of priests and you make confession of your sins. And then the priest gives you some remedy for your sins. Say so many Hail Marys and put something in the hundi box. Or put it in my hand and it goes in my pocket. So it became a business of selling indulgences. And there were persons who were priests in the Catholic Church who saw this going on in their undergraduate stage, and they said, I'm out of here. And so that started the Protestant Reformation. They were protesting selling indulgences or taking a principle that prayaschitta is a principle, but it became a business. So we don't do business. We genuinely extend the opportunity for persons to contribute. to the good cause. And if our hearts become attached to not the good cause in giving people the opportunity, but to become the business mindset, then purity is lost. So, vimuyan, chochan vimuyan upayanti kashmalam. Kashmalam means it becomes dirty. So, being attached to the fruits of work, that's just, you know, the simple phrase that Prabhupada has used, or karma pala, trying to be the enjoyer of the fruits of one's work. That's material consciousness. So that material consciousness can be imported into the realm of bhakti, and then bhakti is lost. The elevating power of our activity can be lost if we're not vigilant, if we become complacent or greedy or forgetful of what the purpose of bhakti is for us and for those who are extending bhakti to. So, Jad Bharat doesn't have that problem. King Rahugana has varying manifestations of that problem, and he's being anesthetized by Jad Bharat's strong words. And the king takes it. He's actually a good soul. But he hasn't had good association, and so he became worldly contaminated. That'll happen. So we should keep good association so we don't become materially contaminated or complacent or business-minded or something like that. So, any comments or discussion? Yeah. You have a good strong voice. Go ahead.
You were talking about, each one of us has been destined to go through the good things and bad things according to our karma. But the solution for that is to pursue the bhakti. I was wondering, like, in that case, like, each one of us will be doing that bhakti process, but it's not happening.
What's not happening?
Only some people are attracted to their bhakti and get the opportunity to practice, for it. So, is that because most people have done some pious activity that they get this attraction to bhakti or get them the opportunity in the association of the devotees and then pursue that thing when compared to the others?
Well, bhakti nourishes bhakti. The seed of bhakti comes from one who has bhakti. Now, there isn't another way. It isn't by piety. A person that may be impious can take bhakti quickly or may not take bhakti quickly. A person who's pious may take bhakti quickly, may not take bhakti quickly. The operative principle is bhakti. So your question is, what makes the person say yes instead of no? Is it pious activities? It helps, generally speaking. It's the wet wood becoming dry wood metaphor. It helps. You take dry wood and bring it near fire and it can ignite more quickly than wet wood. But sometimes, I don't want. It's not piety. I'm happy. I'm happy. Who needs? If I go plunging back down again in the dunking stool, then maybe I'll take bhakti. And if I'm suffering a lot, I'll turn to God. Because I'm pious, and four types of pious people run service. When they're suffering, they want relief. And then the relief is over and they stop bhakti. So there's all kinds of factors. It's not just pious activities. That's the short answer. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains this way: unknowing Agata Sukriti, and Sukriti in this case meaning devotional service, like, for example, people hearing the holy name. They may not even know that they're hearing it. They may not understand it, but it's creating auspiciousness, this agata sukriti, an accumulation of agata, take prasadam. Or just do some service for the devotee. They don't even know you're a devotee. But unknowingly, and as that unknowing accumulates, then one can knowingly accept. That's Bhaktivinoda Thakur's. So there's many ways of looking at it, many factors. Don't try to narrow it down to one, because you'll miss the target. Yeah.
So in the nature of devotion, you know, at the start of the study, that this lot of previous pious and helps us to go into
the... But the previous pious is this transcendental piety, not the material kind. It's described in Chaitanya Charitamrita, quoting Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Bhog Anmukhi Sukriti Moksh Anmukhi Sukriti Unmukhi Bhakti Anmukhi Sukriti. That's not the material kind of piety. It's association with devotees, association with those that are carrying bhakti unknowingly, and it accumulates. That kind of sukriti. Okay. Yes. Here's the microphone. Don't speak too loudly, though.
The book distribution topic caught my extra attention today, aspect you mentioned. I noticed two feelings when I am unable to give a book, when I couldn't get a donation, there is a feeling of guilt. And when receiving a donation, there is a tendency of fruitive activity or they're involved.
Okay.
But as you mentioned now, act of giving, you can mention this is yours, but so that...
That's a strategy. And the principle, I'll give another example just to help understand the context. Life membership. Life membership deteriorated into a money-making procedure. Prabhupada conceived of it differently. He conceived of it as people in India, they like to give charity to the temple, but we like to give them books. So connect the two and you become a life member and you get books. Instead of just selling the book, they may say no, but if they... So, because then they start calculating, okay, how much did the book cost, and maybe they can get the book cheaper somewhere else. And, you know, it's just part of the mindset of people in India, sorry to say. So we want to give them books, they like to, so connect the two. And having facility in our temples where they can come and stay and attend the morning program, and it becomes one of the giving aspects. And then people would sign up and, you know, demand, because they were, their mentality wasn't right. And maybe the mentality of the membership persons wasn't right. They promised the moon. And then people become disappointed because you don't have any moon. You don't have any guest house. Or etc. So it kind of soured because of the material mentality. So, but back to, you know, your person-to-person book. So that what you just described, what you experienced, it's not just the solution is what Vaisheshika Prabhu said, because one could be calculating still on the material platform. This is to get that. It's not the giving mentality, it's a calculating mentality. It's not a silver bullet. The heart has to become pure. In principle. Some persons, it helps them to specify. Well, you know, give me an idea. So you can specify. You know, some people, da-da-da-da. But give for your heart. But don't be in the calculating entrepreneurial mentality. Because otherwise it's painful. And the purity is purity is the force is absent. That exchange doesn't give them the same satisfaction as even if you give them a dollar amount, it's just a suggested donation. You know, the previous line was it costs X to print. But give what you like. You know, so there's different ways. It's not like a rule. It's the mentality of giving rather than, you know, the particular vocabulary that expresses it. It frees our heart from contamination and makes the exchange long-lasting, satisfying. Okay.
Thank you, Marsh.
Yes. Question? Go ahead. I didn't see.
So the question of over-endeavor, I have heard that anything we do in Krishna service is not over-endeavor.
Anything is not over-endeavor.
Any service to Krishna is not over-endeavor.
I don't know if that's correct. I've never heard that one, and I don't know if it's correct.
Okay.
There is over-endeavor, to my understanding. Okay. Supposing somebody, they don't have time for the sadhana because they're striving so hard to serve Krishna in some way. That's an over-endeavor. They have misplaced priorities. What do you think?
I agree with you. So the line, is there some basic guidelines that we understand, okay, we are overstretching?
And the guideline is, the endeavor is for the pleasure of Krishna. The guideline is not for my sense of gratification that I achieve something. The doership mentality. And that disappears, or fades at least, and the pleasure of Krishna is the endeavor. That's the boundary line. Now, for example, Srila Prabhupada pushed really hard for completing the Krishna Balaram temple. While he spoke, you know, don't over-endeavor. And so his purpose, who can say precisely what was in his heart? But his life was short. And he knew that the disciples needed a little push. Or this, you know, classic example of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Or the Bombay Temple. You know, there were some things that Prabhupada pushed really hard. One could fault him for saying, oh, he's demanding an over-endeavor. But it was mission-specific and pleasing Krishna-specific and taking the backside of disciples who had been lazy. Unnecessarily. I remember very clearly Prabhupada was the circumstance with Chaitanya Charitamrita was like that too. Prabhupada was way ahead with everything and they were like lagging behind, and his life was short and he wanted to give to the world. He was relying upon those who were surrendered, and he pushed them. One time when visiting in New York, he asked Pradyumna, because he was the Sanskrit person, how are you doing with the synonyms? Because that was a service that Pradyumna had. He was like cantos behind. Prabhupada was really upset with him. And that in one night he did all the synonyms for cantos. Don't get behind again. So was that an over-endeavor on his part? It was his mood is Krishna's pleasure, and he made sacrifices, and he depending upon different time, place, circumstance, persons, he would place some challenge before them, but not at the sacrifice of their sadhana, not the sacrifice of the doership mentality in favor of pleasing Krishna mentality. He had that capacity. Yes. You're making a statement. What's the question?
Is it advisable to aim for such a level of consciousness?
Which consciousness are you referring to? Become a beggar?
In the service of the Lord.
But there are two different principles. One is the duties of a brahmana, and the other is the consciousness of a Vaishnava. The first example is a brahmana doesn't become a shudra. A brahmana would rather go begging than become a shudra. That's, varna specific. Then the aspiration of a devotee to become a beggar, well, we become a giver. Aspire to become a giver. And then find ways and means that match the audience, the persons who you're addressing, that they'll hold you and thus bhakti, who you're representing, the bhakti method, bhakti process, with respect. I'll give another Prabhupada story example and then I'm going to end. Many times Prabhupada would say that professional reciters are taking the message of the Bhagavatam and making livelihood out of it. And that corrupts and contaminates their consciousness and thus the purity of their delivery of the message. So he was eschewing or advising us, beware of this, don't do this. And don't go to those who have that mentality. And he would say it over and over. So, one time, I just happened to be in Prabhupada's quarters, and Sri Govinda, who at that time was the president of the Chicago Temple, was visiting in New York, and he had three things he wanted to bring to Prabhupada's attention, and one of them was he wanted Prabhupada's permission to book a big hall for a big public advertised program where he could invite Prabhupada and have many people hear him. Prabhupada heard him out and said, they must pay a fee. And Sri Govinda went, physically, his body language was, what? But Prabhupada, you always taught us not to be professional reciters. And Prabhupada's reply was, in your country, if people receive something free, they don't have much regard for it. But if people see there's a fee connected, they'll have more regard for it. So there must be a fee, and if you arrange a fee, then I'll come. So it wasn't greed or self-aggrandizement. It was to help attract the hearts and the minds of the audience, because otherwise they would take it for granted or just not even come because it's for free. It's cheap. He had studied the mentality of people. He described, before the Hare Krishna movement began, he would walk the streets of New York, specifically, he said, to observe the mentality of the people, the mindset of the people. How are they? What's their character? What's their quality? Because you have to know your audience in order to present effectively. So he studied and studied and studied. And this was one of his conclusions. While he spoke against the professional reciters, it wasn't for the business of his maintenance, his livelihood. No way. Okay, and there Srila Prabhupada keeps there.